Real Steel. It's that time of year. There's never an off time of year for steel products because they make sure your home, your garden, your lawn, your neighbor's property, everything is in tip-top shape year-round. But come on, man, spring is upon us. So you need to go to Steel USA. That's STIHL, steelusa.com, and check out all their products. They have all kinds of deals going right now, money off on trimmers, hedge cutters, mowers, pruners. I love that zero-turn mower. I was telling you about that a couple of weeks ago. They right now have 0% financing on the zero-turn mowers. All kinds of battery-powered products. They're the best in the business, and it's that time of year, man. You're going to be cleaning up out front. The snow, hopefully, most of it is behind us, and you want to make sure that your property is the best on the block. So go to steeldealers.com to find the dealer near you, more than 10,000 around the country. It's Steel, STIHL.
This week on the Drew Goodman Podcast, baseball season is here, and manager Bud Black joins Drew to get you acquainted with your 2024 Rockies.
You know, their heart and their head are in the right spot, and their gut's in the right spot, too. And it was tough last year, but this is a new year. You know, we've changed some faces. The 26-man roster is different than it was last year. So, Drew, there's not a bad guy in there.
Plus, Drew is talking tournament. Subscribe to the Drew Goodman Podcast wherever you find podcasts and tell a buddy. This is the Drew Goodman Podcast.
All right, welcome in, everybody. We are on the eve, as I speak to you tonight, of the 2024 baseball season, the regular season. It has begun. I guess it already began for both the Padres and Dodgers playing over in Seoul, splitting a series a week ago. But it begins in earnest tomorrow, so when you're listening to this, perhaps the Rockies already 1-0. Maybe they're 2-0. Maybe they get off to a great start. Need to. Last year was a tough beginning, a tough finish. They lose 103 games. You know all about that. They were 7-20 in the month of April after starting the year 2-0 in March. We're going to talk baseball here pretty much throughout, but I want to bounce to the college basketball tournament because that is what is at the forefront of most people's mind, the middle of March Madness. And from a regional standpoint, good years for both Colorado and Colorado State. And I'll begin with Colorado State in that they won a game in the tournament. It was a surprise, as we talked about, I think, last week, that they ended up in a play-in situation. And they responded as you'd hope they would. They blew out Virginia and said, hey, we belong. They did not play well against Texas. I thought that was a winnable game. Unfortunately, their best player, and this is athletics, who's had a Colorado State University Hall of Fame career, he probably should have his number retired, Isaiah Stevens, he didn't have a great day. And they needed him to have a really good day, shooting the basketball in particular. But overall, a great year for Nico Medved and Colorado State. They were as good as anyone the first couple of months of the season. They reached number 13 in the nation. And when you look forward, I'm one of those people, probably like you if you're a hardcore college football or basketball fan, you look at, you know, 247 recruiting, rivals recruiting. All right, who did Colorado get? Who did Colorado State get? In basketball, I don't think it means anything anymore. Look at some of the elite teams in the college game in basketball. It's all about the portal. And I know most of you are tired of hearing about that and tired of hearing about NIL, and they got to make improvements in the NIL. There's got to be some sort of foundation of rules. There's got to be probably some sort of cap. I mean, there was that. Did you guys catch this? There was that football player from the state of Iowa, who we went to Alabama. He's a tackle, and he was one of the most celebrated high school tackles in the country. He signs with Alabama, came down to Iowa and Alabama, I think. And then he, after Coach Saban leaves, he goes back to Iowa. He gets in the portal, and he goes back to Iowa, and he gets a really nice NIL package, naturally. He just went back to Alabama. He never even played in a spring practice with Iowa, and he's back at Alabama. I mean, there are no rules. It's crazy right now. And I'm all about the players getting taken care of because they got taken advantage of for many, many years. But talking about college basketball and specific to Colorado State, look at all of the guys that they're going to lose. Isaiah Stevens, You know, Scott, who is the D2 player of the year at Black Hills State, I mean, he's going to be gone because this was a graduate year. Cartier is going to be gone. I believe, though I think he could come back, in Neek Clifford, the transfer from Colorado. He's originally from Colorado Springs, but he's probably gone. He said, who the heck's Colorado State going to have? You can go out and sign as many 18-year-olds as you want. But the bottom line is, to win and to have a chance to win again, you got to do what Utah State did. They had 11 new players, and they had one hell of a year. First-year coach, too, in Danny Sprinkle. So that's what Nico Medved has to do. Yeah, bring in, because I know Nico well enough, he wants to develop players, but he also understands the complexion of the sport right now is that you have to go in the portal. And with Colorado State, you're still a upper mid-major. You're not a Power 5 school or a basketball blue blood that can go get a guy who blew up at Texas San Antonio and becomes an elite player, or the kid connect from Thornton by way of Sterling and Northeastern by way of Northern Colorado, who became the SEC Player of the Year at Tennessee. He transferred after two good years at Northern Colorado. Colorado State, even with the Colorado ties of connect, probably wasn't getting that kid. But they're going to have to find a way to fill up that roster primarily, not exclusively, but primarily with kids out of the portal. Down the road in Boulder, couldn't be happier for Tad Boyle. I guess I could be happier if they won another game. And they played, you know, three exciting basketball games. They beat Boise State. They win another game, get to the round of 32. And I said all along, and having seen them a bunch up close doing their games this year on seven occasions, that they were a tournament team. And they had to play really well the final 3 weeks of the season to convince the committee that they were plenty good enough. And then the damage that they did in the tournament to the very end showed that, you know, they were most deserving. So thrilled for Tad Boyle. They have three guys that could be in the NBA draft. Cody Williams, just on potential alone, is going to go very high. We know about that. Tristan Da Silva played the best basketball of his career. The knock on him, and I've said this before, and I've had this conversation with him, said this last week, was that he wasn't always aggressive enough, and he understood that, and he played his best basketball in his final days as a Buff, and he was terrific. And you can see now why, you know, there's NBA scouts that probably say, hey, this kid's worth a flyer in the second round. It's KJ Simpson the same, because KJ Simpson is as fearless as they come, and they could lose three guys to the NBA draft. I hope that KJ, selfishly, Buff fans would be in agreement, comes back to Boulder. And Tad builds on a really great recruiting class from last year, a top 15 consensus recruiting class, and hits the portal again, and Colorado can be right there because it's going to be even tougher in that Big 12. Big 12 is a basketball conference and better than the Pac-12 has been in recent years. But congrats to both of those programs. Really good years. A lot to be proud of in Boulder and Fort Collins. And as we speak, the women continue on for Coach Payne. So that's great for the University of Colorado. By the way, I still have of my best bracket. What do I have? I think I have 6 of 8 left. And my champion's UConn. So that's my best bracket. Some other ones that are not so good. Moving to baseball, before we talk about the Rockies and the 2024 season and get to Buddy Black, I'm sure you saw this, that other than the Dodgers, the industry took a step back and had some sobriety, in my opinion, when it comes to contracts, for the most part. The Dodgers spent over $1 billion. Like 40% of the money spent on free agents was spent by the LA Dodgers. Scott Boras, who's the best at what he does, maybe in all of sports, he may be the most impactful agent in all of sports. I know owners, many of them probably loathe him. A lot of fans probably loathe him. but he's great at what he does. He gets the maximum dollar amount for his clients. This year was a little different. Boris had many of the top free agents on the market. Cody Bellinger, I think he was hoping to get him a 6-7 year deal for, you know, 250 plus million. That wasn't happening. Even though he had a really good year last year with the Cubs, I think that GMs around baseball look back on how things went in his final few years in LA, and some of his lack of production may have had to do with the shoulder injury. But no ownership group came forward and said, no, here's 6-7 years and $250, $300 million. He signed, a 3-year, $70 million deal, somewhere in there, and there's opt-outs in there. Blake Snell, who for goodness sake just won a Cy Young Award and has won one in the American League, as you know, 2 years, $62 million with an opt-out after year one with the Giants, and he sat out there forever. And I think it was the thought, naturally, of Scott Boras that he was going to get him some long-term deal, again, 6-7, maybe longer, with, you know, the enormous dollar amount. Didn't happen. Jordan Montgomery, 1 year, $25 million, Arizona. I think it's a great deal for Arizona. They're going for it. As good as the Dodgers are on paper, Padres are still good. The Giants have made a lot of moves, right? They're going for it, and they now have a big three, if you will, Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, and then Montgomery. Rockies won't see Montgomery in the opening series. It's probably going to take him, I'm guessing, a couple of weeks to ramp up. But it was a good move from Arizona's standpoint, but from Scott Boras' standpoint, Montgomery didn't get the lengthy deal after a real good year last year and a great postseason with Texas. Matt Chapman, he signs with San Francisco. And Chapman, another guy, so-so year offensively with Toronto, still well thought of defensively, but he didn't get the long-term deal. So what have we learned? We've learned that for 25 out of 30 teams, the decline in regional television sports dollars is real. Teams are not making what they had made in the past. And to make up those dollars, at least in the foreseeable future, it is going to be a challenge. And that's why one of the reasons, and maybe the most significant reason, that there's been a decline in years and dollars spent. But I think overall, there's a sobriety out there that when you look back at these deals, and I know it only takes one team to offer up, you know, a 7-8 year, $250, $300 million deal. But I think a lot of teams are looking at it and saying, it's just not wise. Most of these deals don't end well, especially with pitchers. Been said it forever. Used to be the two absolutes in life were death and taxes. There's three absolutes, death, taxes, and pitchers get hurt. All right, the 2024 Rockies, what will it look like? More importantly than what will it look like for me is, at the end of the 24 season, will we be able to say, you know what? Yeah, the Rockies didn't go to the playoffs, because I doubt that's going to happen. They're in transition. But can they take a hopefully significant step forward in the process of getting back to where they were in 17 and 18? And that's getting to the postseason tournament. Because in baseball, as much as any sport, maybe more so than any sport, if you get in the tournament, you can get hot and find yourself in a World Series, as the Rockies did in 2007, as the Arizona Diamondbacks, who won in the low 80s last year, but got in the tournament, and they ended up in the World Series. And they took out the 100-win Dodgers along the way. So get in the tournament. So at the end of 2024, I want to be able to have a conversation with all of you on this podcast and many times on the television airwaves as the season unfolds to say, you know what? The Rockies, they're not a playoff team yet, but they've made strides with certain individuals, and collectively they've taken a step forward to getting back to where we want to see them, and that is the postseason. So what's this 2024 season going to look like? What's the team going to look like? I think they will take a step forward. I think offensively, good health being a requirement, which they didn't have last year, they'll be better. Let's start behind the plate. Elias Diaz is a good receiver, and he can do damage offensively, and he's a guy that plays virtually every day in a position where it is the most demanding on the diamond. The Rockies have a good one back there. At first base, you're going to see Chris Bryant some. You're going to see Ellerys Montero some. You're going to see Michael Tolia a little bit. And I hope Michael Tolia in the spring was good. He's going to strike out some, but hopefully he's able to contribute. Chris Bryant's got to stay on the field. I was watching his batting practice today in the workout before the opener tomorrow. And Chris Bryant's batting practice, honestly, and I know it's BP, and I'm big on saying all these guys are the best in the world. They all look like the greatest player ever at 5 o'clock taking batting practice. Chris Bryant's batting practice, and he's a little shorter to the baseball than I've seen him, is the best I've seen him since he's been a Rocky. And I know he feels good. I've talked to him enough. The body's well. Hopefully at the end of the year, we're talking about a Chris Bryant that played 135, 145 games and produces 25 homers and hitting where he does in the lineup. It should mean 90-plus RBIs. I hope that's the Chris Bryant, because it's still in there, that we get to see and we can put behind him, most importantly, some of these injuries that he suffered the last year. The other guy is Montero. Talked a lot about him in the lead-up to opening day. I'm a fan of Montero. I think he's going to strike out like so many of the Rockies, like so many players in the game. It is something the Rockies have to cut down on appreciably. But I think of Montero, if he gets 500 at-bats, he's another guy that can hit 20-plus home runs. And they need it. They hit 163 home runs last year, for goodness sake. It's one of the worst marks in baseball. They need to be in that 200 homer area. They only had two guys that hit 20-plus homers last year. McMahon hit 23, and Nolan Jones in two-thirds of a season hit 20. I hope, and this is where the Rockies will have taken a step, if we're talking about, you know, four or five, maybe more guys that hit 20. And they're guys who are capable. Not only Montero and Bryant, naturally. I think the shortstop in Tovar can hit 20 homers. Last year he hit 15. Played 150-plus games. Tied Todd Helton for the franchise rookie record doubles with 37. And the Rockies, and I know they get criticized for moves they've made and moves they didn't make frequently the last few years. They were much better at the around the trade deadline last year in unloading some talent from the C.J. Crones to the Randall Grichuks to the Pierce Johnson, getting pitchers in return. I thought that was job well done by the organization. Quite honestly, they probably could have gone one step further with Brent Suter. And I love Brent Suter personally. I love all those guys personally. But Brent Suter was a valuable commodity. Rockies knew they weren't going to win, a ton of games. They probably could have moved Brent Suter and gotten something around that time frame as well. But this signing of Tovar, $63.5 million over the next 7 years for a kid who's 22, who clearly has established that he's going to be a hell of a player on both sides of the baseball, as he was as a rookie. One of the better shortstops in the game last year. I thought it was a great move. Not only cost certainty, but to lock up a shortstop for 7 years, around 63.5, it's been the trend with some really talented young players. Arizona did it with Corbin Carroll. Really smart move. So I applaud a standing ovation for the Rockies going out and doing that with Tovar. So again, with Tovar, wouldn't shock me if he hit 20-plus home runs. That's three. McMahon, I mean, every year hits, 20, 22 home runs. 23 last year. The challenge for Mac is, can he move it forward, six, eight home runs and be a 30-homer guy? Hope so. He's steady, man. He's great defensively. There's more in there, I think, offensively in terms of consistency, but he plays 150-plus games every year. Nolan Jones, I hope we're watching, a superstar emerge in front of our eyes. Where in June or July, we're talking about he's the best player on the Rockies. He was last year. Now can he jump from a 20-homer, 20-stolen base guy to a 30-homer and still steal 20 bags? I think he can. Brenton Doyle hit barely over the Mendoza line last year, low on base percentage, super high strikeout rate, gold glove defense. He can be much better offensively. I'm not suggesting he's going to be a 280 hitter, but can he hit 235 and hit 15 homers and raise the on base percentage above 300 while still playing tremendous defense? I think so. The best hitter on the Rockies, best overall hitter, game on the line, the guy you want at the plate, and I hope in addition to, you know, the aforementioned Nolan Jones, but right now, it's still Charlie Blackmon. Charlie is still the toughest out, night in and night out, at bat to at bat, on the Rockies. And he looks like he did 13 years ago, 14 years ago when he came up. He takes phenomenal care of himself. I don't think Charlie's going to hit 20 homers. I think he's still going to hit 280, and he's going to hit, you know, hopefully 10 or 12 homers. So all in all, hopefully that adds up to where the Rockies, another guy who can hit 15 to 20 is Diaz, we talked about earlier. I hope it adds up to, you know, at least 190 plus homers. They have to improve in that regard. They have to improve, and we'll talk to Buddy about this, in on-base percentage. The most important element of baseball has been and will always be, whether you're 10 years old or you're the best players in the world and you're 25 to 30 years old, it's about pitching. And the Rockies pitching staff is going to be headed by Kyle Freeland, who we know all about. Kyle, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about him. He had a great spring, velocity's up. You know what kind of competitor he is. Cal Quantrill was a nice pickup. You hope that he can return to what he was a couple of years ago for Cleveland, how he finished the year last year after battling some shoulder ailments. He'll pitch out of the two hole. Austin Gomber is not going to blow you away with velocity. He has a great curveball. We've seen stints where Gomber's good. Ryan Feltner has the best stuff of anybody that's currently in the rotation until Germán Márquez comes back. And then you have Dakota Hudson, with Peter Lambert, you know, in that long haul spot starter capacity. And the ball's going to be in play with that Rocky staff quite a bit. The good news with the ball in play is the Rockies should be one of the better defensive teams in the National League. Gold Glove caliber defense at third, Gold Glove caliber defense at short, guy who's won a Gold Glove and Brendan Rodgers at second. We talked about Brendan, by the way, last week, that this is a big year for him. Diaz solid behind the plate, Gold Glove player at center, guy who has a lot of ability in left with a huge arm. So, ball in play, yeah, you'd like to see the Rockies punch guys out at a much higher rate. It's 30th in baseball last year. I don't see them making a quantum leap right now with who they have in their rotation. That's something that has to improve going forward with some of the young pitchers in their system, with the return of Germán after the All-Star break. But with the ball in play, you got to put away outs. And hopefully the Rockies will be able to do that, especially in a brutal division. The AL East is tough. I don't think there's a division better than the NL West. The Dodgers are the Dodgers. The Giants have, at least on paper, increased their talent pool considerably. The Padres, disappointing a year ago, had to win a lot late to finish over 500 in a team that was expected to win 95 plus. They're still a good team even without Juan Soto, even without Blake Snell. And Arizona is the defending National League champions, and they improved themselves, I think, in certain areas. We talked about Montgomery. They got Eugenio Suarez to play third, going to strike out a bunch, but he's going to hit a lot of homers as well. They bring Gurriel back. It's a brutal division. But focus going forward on, are the Rockies better at the end of the year? Have they taken a stride forward? And I hope, that is my fingers crossed, that at the end of the year you can say, yeah, they made a large step forward. Going to the bullpen very quickly, I think you're going to see a combination of Justin Lawrence and Tyler Kinley late. Fan of both of those guys. I think at some point in time you're going to see Jaden Hill talking about improving. Jaden Hill has a big arm. Jaden Hill had a really good spring. And he's not far away. And he's a guy that has the ability and the stuff and the makeup, it appears, to pitch late in games and ultimately become a closer. So that's a name to remember as this season unwinds. Nick Mears has really good stuff. He'll be part of that bullpen. And in a few weeks, the Rockies will get back Lucas Gilbreth, who, you know, has been out for a year plus with Tommy John. And Lucas Gilbreth has a really good arm on the left side. And the Rockies have been searching for a period of time to find, you know, a guy that can be dominant on the left side. Brent Suter, first half of last year, was. He does it kind of in a crafty way. Gilbreth, a little bit more power. So that, you know, that's a quick synopsis of what the Rockies are going to look like in a most difficult division to compete. But again, it comes down to me is how much better are the Rockies at the close of 2024 than they were last year when they lost 103 games and it was not good. Now, it doesn't happen overnight, but it can happen quicker than some suggest in terms of getting back to relevance and getting back to contention. And look no further than Texas and Baltimore, who's drafted really well, obviously. And even Arizona, right? Arizona was in the World Series a couple years after losing 100+. All right, we do it every year. We talk to the skipper on the eve of the start of the season. And Buddy is always honest, he's candid, and will give you an idea of what he learned over the last 6 weeks of spring training with the 2024 version of the Colorado Rockies. Here's the skipper, Buddy Black. All right, we do this annually, and in March is always an interesting time. First of all, I always say March lies more than anything, but for someone like you who's been in the game literally forever, what do you try to accomplish in March as the Rockies are in transition, if you will?
Well, I mean, for us, us meaning the coaching staff, I think the front office, you know, what we try to get done. It's a combination of a number of things, primarily to get our the players that we know are probably going to be on the roster, you know, get them ready physically for the opener, and there's a process to do that. Within that, right, within the Major League clubhouse, we had 67 guys. You know, create an environment and a culture of work, of team, of belief, of pride, because it changes in the room based on the personnel. And we had almost 20, 25 guys who were new to big league camp, a lot of them from our own system, who are going to be our future. So, you know, that type of thing is occurring every day. We want to expose our young players to exhibition games. We want to expose our young players who are our prospects, both on the mound or position players, to the Major League coaching staff and to veteran players. You know, to watch how a veteran player goes through his day, his routine, his work ethic, you know, what it takes to be a longtime major leaguer. I mean, there's a lot, Drew, you know, that we want to accomplish, not only for, you know, this 2024 season, but for seasons beyond, right? Some principles, some standards for our young players. And our older players understand those standards. So, again, it's a matter of, you know, getting everybody, you know, sort of moving in the same direction for an opener. And it could be the AAA opener, AA opener, and obviously the Major League opener.
I want to pick up on a word you used, belief. And obviously the last few years have been tough when it comes to the bottom line, and that's wins and losses. What have you done to instill belief as this camp breaks and you embark on the 2024 season? How do you go about that, Buddy?
Well, I think, I mean, for me personally, I think a coach has to be genuine. They have to be themselves. You know, I do it through, you know, just hard teaching, hard coaching, and do it with an enthusiasm and a spirit that, you know, I always appreciated from, you know, my coaches. And, you know, that's something that the coaches and I talk about, the, you know, the the energy level that we create as coaches, the work that we put in. Players watch everything. They notice everything. And they know if they're being supported, that makes them, understand that there's a total organizational commitment from the people in the trenches, the players and the coaches. So for me, because of, where we've been, we have to, do everything we can to get the most out of our players. And, we feel, position player wise, we're in a pretty good place, I think, presently and hopefully moving forward. Now, guys have to play well on the mound. It's a little trickier, right? We got decimated last year by injuries on the mound. This year we came out of this healthy. Hopefully we can stay healthy and the guys can perform like they're capable.
What were you most pleased with when you now evaluate, February and March? And I know what you're going to say also. I'll steal, number one you touch on is good health. You got out of this camp, by and large, very, very healthy. But what else struck you as you look back very quickly?
Well, I think for us, we just got to get better, offensively, we got to make strides with our on base percentage, putting the ball in play better, two strike approach. We just have to really cut the strikeouts down, and we have some players who have a propensity to strike out. We got to really, really work hard to make sure that those numbers come down. On the mound, conversely, we got to make sure that we get the ball in the strike zone and don't beat ourselves with walks and not being able to hold runners or field our position. So the little things that help us deter 90 feet, from the pitching side. All pitchers give up hits. All pitchers give up broken bat hits. There's things that happen, but we got to control the things that we can control. And hopefully, you'll see this season our pitchers a little bit more in the zone, and offensively, putting the ball in play a little bit more.
Yeah, you're optimistic by nature. When you look at your starters and you go around, what makes you go, we can make a significant jump? And you touched on some of the categories where you need to make a jump, but when you look at it and you say, hey, yeah, we can improve here because of,
well, with the starting rotation, if that's your question, with the pitchers, again, we've seen flashes of Gomber for 8, 10, 12 starts in a row, put it together. We've seen that from Kyle. It takes, a pitcher hopefully will make his 30 starts. Hopefully we don't have to dig into any sort of pitching depth. But, for me, go to the post, keep us in games the best you can. And the thing that I like about our group is that, our guys are wired the right way. They compete, they prepare. They might not have the overpowering stuff, but it's, for me, it's comforting to know that, their makeup, their competitiveness, their preparation, their work in between starts, their unselfishness. I mean, you feel good about that type of player. Now, they have a lot of pride, and hopefully, we can, do some good things on the mound and get it done. And the position players, the starting nine that we run out there on a given day, same thing. They prepare professionally, and they have a mindset and a dedication to be better than last year, and it will help. A full year of Jones, a full year of Bryant and Rogers, guys who are banged up, Doyle, hopefully a full year, a second year of Tovar. So again, we just got to improve to the point where we can gain some momentum, and that a lot of times Drew has a way of carrying you through a season.
I want to ask you about a guy that's intriguing. I know he's intriguing to you. He's intriguing to me. You see flashes, real good late last year, and that's Ellerys Montero, because he can supply something the Rockies need, and that's hitting the ball over the wall.
Yeah, we need power. I think in our ballpark, as with the spaciousness, it also helps to have guys who can hit and use the whole field and get base hits and hit for average. But power is such a big part of today's game. The stuff coming against us is better than it's ever been. Velocities, secondary pitches. Montero has that ability with one swing to change a game. You know, just like I think, you know, Bryant has that ability. Jones has that ability. Mac has that ability. And if you have another guy in the likes of Montero, it just makes your lineup deeper. And you don't have to rely on other guys to, you know, to get that big hit. But you're right. He put together a pretty good 6 weeks. You know, there's thunder in the bat. Again, we have to make sure that he makes strides on the chase rate and basically the, you know, the breaking ball down and away from him. You know, it's a pitch that a lot of players over the history of baseball have had trouble with. And we have a couple guys, and that's their focus is just that, being able to recognize it, being able to be aggressive to be able to hit, and if they see that pitch, be able to stop. And it's hard. Because you know, you've heard we've all heard how tough it is at a baseball. But you know, Montero, you know, looked as though you know things were you know coming together a little bit the last 6 weeks, and hopefully now, a year older, a good off season, more confidence, he can roll into the season and do some damage.
Tough decisions always at the end of camp, and one of those for you, and granted, we all know who follow baseball, it's not just the 26 guys that start ostensibly on April 1st. You're going to, you know, need many more. Michael Tolia took your coaching and Bam Bam's coaching and was able to apply it not only in winter ball but March, and he makes your club where maybe some folks didn't see that one coming.
You know, I think with Tolia, you know, it started last August where, you know, we've been around Michael enough to know that, you know, what he was doing in the box, what his move was, what his swing was like, it just wasn't going to translate over time in the majors. So the process started actually in August when we were in Tampa, long, hard conversation, and carried through September and then, you know, into winter ball with Vinny Castilla, and then over the winter when he came back to work on, you know, the things that we identified that we felt as though we needed to do. And Michael understood that. You know, he understood after seeing, you know, major league pitching for, you know, over 250 at-bats, that he needed to make some adjustments. And, it's a little bit of hand movement. It's a little bit of, you know, getting a better load, getting his hands separated a little bit from his front side, and, you know, just getting a little bit more rhythm to his swing and a little bit more momentum creating swing. And it looks as though, you know, the adjustments that he's made is paying off. And he had a really good swing. We like where, you know, his hitting mechanics are, and we think that will help him as he rolls into the season. But, you know, he I don't want to say he forced his way on this team, but he, you know, he opened our eyes to some openness to make some adjustments. And that says a lot about a player when, you know, they think they're doing just fine, their minor league numbers are okay, and a lot of times players think that, hey, I've done it in the minors, I can do it in the big leagues. But it just wasn't happening for him. And now, you know, hopefully this can be a start of something really big for Michael.
Well, speaking of the start of something, you guys made an organizational decision that moving forward, Ezekiel Tovar is going to be a foundational piece, and you rewarded him with a really nice contract. There seems to be a trend in that direction when you have a young guy to you know, project out and sign him to a long-term deal. And he certainly fits the mold of that. He's so mature for a young guy.
Yeah, I think that's the key. It's got to be the right guy. And when you look at, you know, the contracts that are giving out to young players, you know, organizations know their players better than anybody. And you give those guys, you know, that type of opportunity for, you know, initial security based on who they are as a person, and you know that they have a lot of pride in their game. You know, they're going to continue to push, and they're going to continue to improve and get better. And at the same time, you know, be invested in the organization. And, you know, Tovar exemplifies all the things that you look for in a player. You know, the upside potential, you know, the work ethic, who he is as a person, his leadership skills, even as a young player, just his passion to play, and, you know, everything that goes into a person's makeup. You like Ezekiel Tovar when he walks through the clubhouse doors. You feel good about it. You feel good about the guy. And that, you know, that's a constant that you want 26 of those guys. So when you have an opportunity to extend him and he comes forward to the club and says, hey, I want to be here. I want to try to get something done. I like it here. I believe in this organization. It makes you feel good.
How much do you utilize either internally or even externally what took place with Arizona across the street, who you'll open the season with, Baltimore, Texas, you know, teams that very recently struggled. Yeah. And all of a sudden now, Texas world champions, Arizona National League champions. We know Baltimore is one of the elite teams in baseball, and they're not far removed from yeah. losing 100 ball games.
Well, that's the thing that, you know, those of us who've been in the game a long time know that, you know, anything can happen in baseball. And they're, you know, by design, you know, the Orioles, you know, they had some really lean years and said it publicly, right, that they were going to, you know, they were rebuilding. You know, the Cubs did it a number of years ago. I think when you look at Arizona or Texas, I think, you know, those two teams, you know, felt they had nice teams. And, you know, they got into the, you know, they got into the playoffs and, you know, they ended up, you know, winning, you know, going to the World Series in the Diamondbacks case, and Texas won the World Series. You know, just from my own personal experience, the both times that, you know, I've won World Series rings, you know, our teams weren't projected to make the playoffs. Kansas City, you know, we won, you know, I think the year we won the World Series, we won 83 games. Anaheim, you know, we weren't expected to win. We were a wild card team and ended up winning the World Series. So, you know, anything can happen. For sure. And, you know, there's a lot of teams that think the same thing. I mean, we're all 30 of us are competitive and want to play well, but you never know how a season's going to play out. In Texas's case, they lost the last four games of the year. They had the division in hand. Houston came up and snatched it from them. You know, the Mariners had to, instead of going down to Texas with a couple of days off, had to fly cross country to Tampa after losing four games in a row to you know, just nab a wild card spot, and then all of a sudden they win 11 road games and are world champions. So it's a crazy sport. You know, playoffs are unexpected situations so often. Not everybody can say that, like in football, right? I think the two best teams got in the Super Bowl, right? The Chiefs got in there and ended up winning the Super Bowl over the 49ers. That was expected. But in baseball, it doesn't happen that way.
Yeah. In closing, I observe you. I see you on a regular basis. You have the same enthusiasm. I can tell, you know, you're ready to go. And just what you were talking about, you never know. You know it's a process. You know that there are holes to be filled. But you're excited, aren't you?
You know, I like this group of men just based on I know how much they care, how much they work. And that makes it easy because there's not a bad guy in there. And they really have a lot of pride in their play and in this organization, and that makes it, you know, from the coaching standpoint, it's comforting to know that we all want to win. That's you know, that's the bottom line. I mean, the bottom line is to win. But you know, when you're going to battle with guys and you're, you know, grinding it out every day, I know that, you know, these guys, you know, their heart and their head are in the right spot and their guts in the right spot too. And it was tough last year, but this is a new year. It's, you know, there's some, you know, we've changed some faces. The 26 man roster is different than it was last year. So, you know, hopefully, you know, this season will be markedly different.
Buddy, it's always good luck, man. The journey begins.
All right, Drew. Thank you. Let's do it.
Thanks as always to Bud. There's so many things I appreciate about Buddy. You know, not only his honesty, his optimism, his professionalism. You guys see glimpses of it on post-game shows or when we run sound bites, you know, in pregame or whatever. But Buddy is such a witty,
funny, articulate, wonderful storyteller, just a joy to be around. And in doing what I do and doing what Spilly and Huey and Jenny and Sully and our whole gang, Mark Stout, and what we do, and the beat writers, you know, Thomas Harding and Patrick Saunders, you're around the manager every single day before the game and after the game. And he is so steady, and he's, as I said, a joy to be around, and I really appreciate that about him. And he's, don't mistake that, man. He is unbelievably competitive, and when he has to be stern, as I've explained in the past, for all of you that think he's not, he can be very stern, and he can let, you know, players on the occasion know that something's not acceptable or the level of play is not acceptable. He's a good man. Rockies have a good one in Buddy Black. Now you just need to upgrade the talent level, because you don't win in sports. Ain't about the coach. Can't magically, you know, X and O your way to 100 wins in baseball. You got to have the talent. And hopefully we start to see an upgrade with some of the guys that you'll see later in 2024. That'll do it for this edition. Enjoy opening day. Enjoy the opening week of the Major League Baseball season. I appreciate you. We'll do it again in 7 days. Baseball is upon us. Take care, everybody.